her wrists to the piano. The things that came out of her mouth. Gibberish and swearing and moaning. Guttural groans and sobs. On and on. Wink jerked and strained against my fingers, but I didn't let go. I didn't let go. Her head whipped sideways, and her back arched, and tears streamed from her green eyes. What should I do? I wanted to stop it. I had to stop it. But I was scared. So scared. Was this what Poppy had wanted? For Wink to come to the Roman Luck House and let the Unforgivables in? Let them destroy her, too? Wink said bad things would happen if we let go. But I wanted to let go of her hand. I wanted to shake her. Shake the Unforgivables out of her. God, it was horrible. No wonder Poppy had died, left alone with them. How could we have done it? Wink started screaming, and I screamed with her. And Zoe and Buttercup screamed too. And Briggs shouted, and Thomas was silent, and... And suddenly it stopped. Wink hushed. Everything. Her voice, her arms, her hair. Hush. Her fingers went limp. She straightened and opened her eyes. The thunderstorm hit, right then. Right that very second. Rain slapped the broken shards of the bay window. Plop, plop, and then faster and faster. Thunder cracked so hard the ground started shaking. Or maybe it was just me, shaking and shaking. I couldn't seem to stop shaking. Wink yanked her hand away. Her fingers slipped right through mine. I let out a little groan as it happened. I'd been so sure that if I just held on to her, everything would be okay in the end. She stood up. She flipped her red curly hair behind her shoulders and put her hands on her tiny hips. God, you're all such losers, she said. And it wasn't Wink's voice, small and whispery and soft. It was arrogant, sultry. Wink touched her hair and looked at her arms and her legs, smooth and graceful twists, eyebrows raised, lips pressed together in a pout. Can you believe this shit? Feral Bell. Beggars can't be choosers, I guess. The chill started in my heart and shuddered through the rest of me. My scalp stung and my skin itched. I still held Buttercup's hand in my left. I'd forgotten all about it until she was suddenly squeezing my fingers so hard it took my breath away. Poppy? Poppy, where are you? Are you okay? What happened to you? Thomas had tears coming down his face, fast, like the rain outside. I'm dead. And she laughed. And it wasn't Wink's laugh. It didn't remotely sound like Wink's laugh. Whispers and chinkling toy piano keys. It was cold and hard and sneering and Poppy. All Poppy. Dead. I'm dead, and this house is my tomb. And I want you to burn it down. I want you to burn the Roman Luck House to the ground. None of us moved. None. Where are you? Can we help you? We're so sorry we didn't believe it. Didn't believe you'd really do it. Buttercup's voice fluttered in and out, like the candle flames. Wink and Midnight tied me up and left me here. But the Unforgivables did their part, too. Freckle-faced Feral was right about them. And she laughed again. Hollow and mean and cold. They're here right now, breathing down your necks. Except you can't even see them, you fools. They won't hurt me anymore. I'm beyond all that. They've got their evil focused on you now.
Who's here? What are the Unforgivables?
Briggs, voice strong and quivering at the same time. Wink sighed. I mean Poppy. I mean Wink.
This is so boring. I'm tired of answering questions. Just shut up, all of you, and let me do what I came here to do.
She climbed on Thomas then, cuddled right up to him. Knees on each side of his hips. She kissed him. He kissed back. It was Wink's red hair and Wink's skinny spine, but it was Poppy's lips and Poppy's gestures, and it was horrifying. Horrifying. She put her mouth by Thomas's ear and began to whisper and whisper. His eyes filled with tears again, and his mouth parted, and he looked so sad, and so filled with joy. Then she was up and onto the next person. Zoe. Buttercup. Whispers and stricken looks and horrifying. Horrifying. Briggs, she kissed him too. Freckled hands on his cheeks. My heart broke watching it. Split in two. And I didn't know if it was because Wink was kissing him, or Poppy, or both. She sat in my lap last. She grabbed my hair in her fingers, and her curls burrowed into my neck, and her chest pressed into mine. And the things she said. The things she said. Poppy's voice coming out of Wink's lips. She said she was sorry. She said it over and over. But Poppy never said she was sorry. Not ever. Not ever. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand one more second of it. I pushed her away from me. The blanket moved, and her foot knocked over the candle, and then flames. Flames and fire.
Wink. I was me again, and the blanket was on fire, and then the edge of Zoe's dress. Midnight jumped to his feet and started stomping out the flames, and Zoe rolled on the ground and Buttercup screamed. The fire flew across the floor and up the curtains and over the piano. Thomas and Briggs tore off their shirts and whacked at the burning orange waves, but the smoke just grew and grew, like magic beanstalks up into the sky. I couldn't see. The smoke, tears running down my face. I stumbled, hit the piano stool. Hands helped me up. I stumbled again. Where was the window? I couldn't see. Couldn't see. Someone pulled on my arm, and then it was there, the bay window, right in front of me. I pushed through, coughing, and I fell down onto the dirt right next to Buttercup. Zoe helped us up. My eyes burned, and I blinked and blinked, but still couldn't see. I grabbed Zoe's hand, and Buttercup grabbed mine, and we ran toward the forest. I smelled pine and knew I'd reached the trees. I let go of the girl's fingers and started rubbing my eyes, streaks of blood across my cheeks, palms cut by the jagged window glass. Buttercup and Zoe scattered in the dark. They didn't wait. They ran like thieves, like the 12 girls in Between the Dragon and the Wrath, not even glancing over their shoulders as they disappeared in the dark. Briggs and Thomas ran past me next, scared white faces and panting open mouths. I looked back at the Roman Luck House, the smoke crawling up and up like it was trying to touch the moon. It didn't care about the rain. The storm couldn't touch the fire at all. Crash. The roof caved in. Crash, crash, crash. I looked around. I wanted to take his hand, but he wasn't there. Midnight wasn't there.
Midnight. The smoke was everywhere. I coughed and coughed. I counted the shapes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They were all through the window. They were safe. I grabbed the sill, careful of the broken glass. And then I heard it. Thunder. Except it wasn't thunder. It was the roof. I saw the crack. The ceiling. I was conscious long enough to see it split in two. Plaster loosening, falling. Then dust. Smoke. My lungs. Dark.
Poppy. I was there, watching. I hated the Roman Luck House. But I was there anyway. I moved with the shadows, and no one saw me. No one ever saw me anymore. I watched it all, I laughed when Wink laughed and winced when Midnight winced. Fire. I was there when the roof caved in. I was there when everyone crawled out of the window, everyone but Midnight. I was there when he hit the floor. I grabbed him. I didn't even think about it. I just grabbed him and pulled him down the hall and out the back door, wooden beams plummeting all around us.
Midnight. I opened my eyes. Forest floor. Earth and pine needles. The sun was rising. I could see the light. I turned my head. It wasn't the sun. It was the fire. The Roman luck fire. 50 yards away to the trees. I tried to sit up, but my bones felt so heavy. So damn heavy. My lungs burned. It hurt to breathe. I smelled jasmine. Smoke and jasmine. And then she was there, face in front of mine. Blonde hair tickling my throat. Midnight, she said. Her voice sounded different. Hollow and sad. Poppy. I reached up to touch her, fingertips stretching toward her cheek. But my hand hit air. She was already gone. I found Wink in the forest. She gave a little cry when she saw me. I put my arms around her. We both reeked of smoke, but it smelled good on her.
I couldn't find you after we all crawled out the window,
Wink whispered into my neck.
What happened, Midnight? Where did you go?
Sirens in the distance, sharp and shrill. I passed out from the smoke, just as the roof caved in. I felt her arms tighten around me, elbows locking in. Someone pulled me out the back door, Wink, into the forest.
Who?
Soft breath on my neck. But I didn't answer her. Do you remember anything? I asked, a half hour later in the hayloft. Do you remember what you did? What happened before the blanket caught on fire? Wink shook her head.
One second I was taking your hand, and the next I woke up to screaming and flames.
You don't remember the Unforgivables? She shook her head again. Dawn was coming. I could feel it more than see it. The air was snappy and crystal cold, and it smelled good after all the smoke.
You were her, Wink.
Her voice, her gestures, her expressions, everything. She didn't say anything for a while. We were leaning against a hay bale, and her head was on my stomach. I ran my thumb down the inside of her skinny arm and stopped at her wrist so I could feel her pulse. Tick, tick, tick. She'd cut her palms on the bay window glass, and there were jagged streaks of dried blood running across her hands. I kissed one of the cuts, and she flinched.
Did you like me being her?
She asked. Soft, soft. No, I said.
Are you sure?
Yes. She turned and pulled my shirt up and kissed my stomach, right above my belly button, her hands on my waist.
Are you sure?
Her lips on my ribs, across my chest. Yes, I'm sure. Her fingernails at my sides, gently, gently. Her red curls everywhere. And then she sat up and kissed me on the mouth, lips full on mine, deep, deeper. It went on and on. She slid her left leg over me, squeezed up her knees right into my hips, one on each side. She flipped her hair and arched her back, just the once, just in the exact right way. And I knew. I knew. I pulled away, just as the first stroke of sun hit the hayloft. I pulled away and looked straight at her. She didn't have to say it. I read it right there in her green sunrise gaze. Read it like a page in a book.
Poppy's not dead,
I whispered.
Of course not,
Wink whispered back. I went home. I showered and crawled into bed. My pillow still smelled like jasmine. I got up in a few hours. I made tea for my dad and brought it to him in the attic. "You hear the sirens last night?" he asked, nose buried in an ancient copy of Don Quixote. "Yeah. The Roman luck house burned." He didn't ask me how I knew. "Must have been the lightning." "Must have been." He nodded but didn't look up. He knew I was lying. He didn't say anything, though. Didn't grill me or force a confession. And he never would. For better or worse, that was my dad. I went down to the kitchen and grabbed a map out of the drawer. The Bell Farm was quiet as I walked on by. All the animals asleep, and the humans too. The farm seemed different. It was still peaceful and magical, but it had a small darkness to it now, like a black cloud on the horizon, like when Thief walks through the forest of sighs and hears the far-off howling of the witch wolves beneath the singing of the birds and the rustling of the green leaves and the murmuring of the river red. I turned and went down the neglected gravel road. Left, then right, then over the hill. To the gold apple mine.
Wink. I watched Midnight walk down the road, and I knew where he was going. He didn't see me. I was good at hiding. I'd learned how from the book Sneaks and Shadows. I taught Poppy how to hide, too. She was a quick learner. The wolf first came to our door on the arm of my brother Leaf. She liked him for his being so savage and wild. She had that in her, too, though mostly it was all buttoned up and locked in, like the drugged woman in blood red and white. The wolf was younger then. She was still just Poppy. She was still just a girl, like the rest of us. And Leaf could handle Poppy. He knew what he was up against. He didn't have a big, soft heart like Midnight, with all its wide-open windows and doors and easy ways of entering. Leaf's heart had barbed wire and alarms and vicious barking dogs. He was safe from her teeth. Outside the hayloft, I was invisible. I was a ghost. But inside the hayloft, it was different. The first time Poppy found me up there, reading to the orphans, she was with Leaf. Later, she started coming up there just to find me. She said she wanted to hear my stories. She said she liked the way I read, and the way my hair curled, and the way my freckles reminded her of my brother. The wolf called me feral outside the hayloft, but inside, she called me Wink. She taught me how to keep my lips soft when I kissed. She taught me how to stroke skin with my fingertips until the goosebumps came. The White Witch gave Edmund Turkish delight and convinced him to betray his brothers and sisters. The wolf kissed me and asked to be my friend. But unlike Edmund, I knew there were strings attached. I knew all the time. I knew what she wanted. I didn't fall under her spell like the rest, like magic words and a wand waved over a head.
Poppy. I jumped in the blue twist. I thought I might want to drown, like Virginia Woolf, even though that wasn't the plan, had never been the plan. But I didn't fill my pockets with stones, so maybe I wasn't truly committed. The water turned me round and round, and just when I was about to open my mouth and let it fill my lungs, the river threw me against a dead old tree, and I came to a stop. I crawled out, black dress sticking to my body like glue. I fell on the riverbank and looked up, and never felt so alive. After that, it was just me and the Bell horses and the old gold apple mine by Gold Apple Creek. I slept on hay and ate wild plums. I sang my heart out in the woods, all alone, like Leaf did that one day. I thought I might be too spoiled and Princess and the Pea to make it alone. So much had happened since that time I'd run off to my grandpa's cabin. But Wink had faith in me, and that gave me faith in myself, and faith was something I never knew I needed until I got it from her. I caught Wink copying my handwriting once. I figured she was up to no good. But then, I was never up to any good either, so who was I to judge? She visited every day and night, and brought me a fishing rod and coffee beans, and hard-boiled eggs and fruit and sandwiches and cheese and books to read. And I read all her fairy books, every last one. I read them over and over. I read them until they started making sense. I liked to make people dance. I liked shaking their strings and making them march up and down the stage to my own distinct poppy tune. But Wink did too. More than me, even. She promised. She knew where he was. Leaf. I had to be the wolf, she said. It was her idea, her plan. The unicorn underwear and the kissing contest and the calling her names in the vile Roman luck house and the making midnight into a hero. I had to get tied up to the piano and stay there all night and then disappear for a while. And then she'd fetch him. She'd fetch him back. And I agreed. I agreed just like that. No hesitation. It was easy for me, as easy as the sun setting, as easy as thunderstorms and rivers rising, and boys leaving, and two girls reading together in a hayloft.
Wink. I spread the rumor that Leaf was finding cures in the Amazon, but he really ran down to California, to the Redwoods. He was living in the forest with some other heroes, sleeping in tents during the night and fighting the loggers during the day. Poppy wanted Leaf. She wanted him so badly that she risked cuddling up to me in the hayloft to find out where he was. The temptress. Gentle words and deliberate gestures. I was supposed to be flattered and shy and overwhelmed, and I was. But not enough. She left the temptress behind eventually. She started using her normal voice. She talked about Leaf, but she talked about other things, too. She told me about the yellows. She told me that she wanted to scream every time her parents called her their little angel. She told me that she'd read all the Laura Ingalls Wilder books 6 times through in secret. And she fantasized about cutting off Mary's blonde ringlets right to the skull. She told me that she'd wished she'd had a younger brother or sister. She told me that she hated the way that everyone at school looked at her like she had all the answers. She told me how she sometimes stayed up all night just to hear the birds start singing their hearts out come dawn.
Poppy. I had this idea that maybe they'd all be better off without me anyway, at least for a while. Buttercup and Zoe and Briggs and Thomas and Midnight. Like, maybe if I disappeared, everyone would be happier. And I'd be happier too, and it wasn't just my self-destructive streak talking. Some people needed to be alone. Thoreau and Emily Dickinson and me. Leaf said that once. And then followed it by saying Thoreau and Emily were better people, way better, even though they were long dead and he'd never met either in person, only read their writing, and yet that still didn't stop him from going on about their supposed shining characters, as compared to me, black and rotten to the core. When Midnight finally found me at the Gold Apple Mine, I was wearing a kerchief in my hair, a blue one, and washing my clothes in the cold stream. My calves moonlight white in the water. I know what I looked like a wholesome dairymaid or something from a pastel-hued painting. Pink cheeks, slightly crooked button nose, working cheerfully in the sunlight. Midnight had been there for a while, I think, just watching me slap a soapy old shirt against a rock. "You saved my life," he said when my eyes met his. "I did," I said back. "Cool as you please." And he smiled.
Wink. Once upon a time, I thought I could change stories, make them go the way I wanted, instead of where they actually went. Leaf warned me against it. He told me I wouldn't find my own story until I stopped messing with everyone else's. I planned to bring Midnight and the Yellows together at the Roman Luck House. I planned it all along. It was the final chapter. The clues? The Yellows would have figured them out soon enough. Together, they would have figured it all out. Like when Percival Rust gathers the orphan bandits, and together they crack the code and find the missing girl in the grisly kidnap. But the clues were for Midnight, not the Yellows. They were for him alone. The jasmine. I filled the dip of each candle with the oil, and then, when I lit the wick, the heat spread the smell throughout the room. Easy, easy, easy. I climbed through Midnight's window every day and sprinkled the oil over his bed. Easy, easy, easy. Playing Poppy? That was easy, too. I'd watched her. I knew her inside and out. I'd read her cover to cover, like The Thing in the Deep.
Midnight. I spent the day with Poppy. I listened to her. She listened to me. I aged about 20 years. Afterward, I found Wink in the hayloft, just standing there at the edge of the opening, waiting for me, like she knew. "You lied," I said, the words out of my mouth before my feet left the ladder. "You plotted with the one person I wanted to leave behind. You manipulated me." Wink backed up. One step, two. "You dangled Leaf in front of Poppy and then pushed her over the edge. You let people think she'd killed herself. And she almost did. How could you do it? How could you do it, Wink?" I put my hands on the floor and pulled myself inside. I stood. I towered over her, but she didn't flinch this time. Didn't turn away. "Did you think that if you created a fairy tale and made all of us play along, made me defeat a monster and become a hero, you'd have a happy ending, like a princess in a hayloft story?" Her red hair hugged her cheeks, long curls covering all the freckles. And the only thing I could see was her damn green eyes, beaming at me, innocent as ever. She still didn't move, didn't apologize. I'd expected lies from Poppy, but not Wink. I put my hand to my heart, closed my eyes, tilted my head back. I'd never yelled in my whole life. Never yelled at Alabama or my parents. Not even Mom when she said she was taking my brother and moving to France. Never raised my voice in anger. But I felt it building now. I was going to yell. I was going to yell until my heart burst open, blood spraying everywhere. I was going to yell until there was nothing left inside me. Not one damn thing. The sound came, up my throat, buzzing at the back of my teeth. I opened my mouth and roared. It was shaky and hoarse and raw, but it was a roar. 3 seconds and I was done. Spent. I sunk down to the hayloft floor and stayed there. Wink came over to me after a while. She sat in the hay, knees tucked under her chin, red hair everywhere.
"Can I tell you something?"
she asked. I shrugged and didn't look at her. The yelling had left me dark inside. Empty. Hollow.
"Pa was tall and lean, with deep brown hair and eyes," she said.
I didn't move. I didn't say anything.
"He was beautiful. I knew this even when I was little. I used to weave my fingers through his hair when he read to me. I'd marvel at the smooth olive skin of his cheeks next to my own pale, freckled hands. I remember running my thumb over his long eyelashes and liking how they tickled my skin."
She paused. I sighed. She kept going.
"Pa first read The Thing in the Deep to me when I was Bee Lee's age. Mim was doing someone's cards, and Felix was sleeping next to her, and Leif was off wandering in the woods, which he started doing as soon as he could walk.
Some people are like that, Pa said. They have the roaming in their blood.
He was a roamer at heart, too, and came from a long line of them. B. Lee is the only one of us that looks like him, though Leif takes after him and all else.
There's no keeping a roamer, Pa used to whisper in my ear, long before I knew how much he meant it. You can tie them down, cage them up like a bird, and it will work for a while, but eventually they will break free, and then they'll run until they die.
I thought he was the hero. I pictured him in my head when he read the fairy stories to me. He was the adventurer, the explorer, the swashbuckler, the champion. He was Calvino, king of the 13th, and Paolo, the lost heir of World's End. He was Redmayne, singer to the gods, and he was Gabriel the shepherd, and Nathaniel, the builder of cities.
She stopped talking for a long time and just stared at the hay. Wink was telling the truth. I could feel it. No fairy tales this time. No lies. And I was back in, just like that. Hook, line, sinker. What happened to him? I asked.
He left the morning Peach was born. I remember. I remember how the mists drifted down from the mountaintops and gave the sun an eerie light. Leif called it a fairy kind of day, and I thought so too. Mim checked herself out of the hospital early and picked us up from Beatrice Combe, who lived off by herself at the foot of Three Death Jack. She watched us sometimes, before she died in her sleep a few winters ago. We got home, and he was gone.
She looked at me, green, green eyes.
3 months later, I was playing Follow the Screams with Leif in the woods, and I saw something in the Roman Luck House. Saw someone moving. I got closer. I peeked in the bay window, and there he was, sitting on the green sofa in the music room, reading a newspaper and drinking a cup of coffee. A pile of clothes in the corner, dirty plates on the floor. Pa had been living there the whole time. The whole time. He hadn't even come home to see his new baby.
Long pause. And then? I asked softly.
And then he saw me at the window, on my tiptoes, my eyes looking over the sill. He didn't smile at me, didn't say my name.
Run along, that's all he said. Run along.
I told Leif about him, and Leif told Mim. Pa left after that, left like Roman luck, gone in the night. Gone for real, gone for good. Autumn and Martin Lind and the murder, that was storytelling, all storytelling. But I did see a man in the Roman Luck House. I didn't lie. Not about that.
Wink got to her feet, slowly, and walked over to the hayloft opening. I followed. She looked out into the dusky evening light. The twins were on the roof of the farmhouse again, throwing apples at Peach on the ground, who easily dodged them, even though she was laughing her head off. Wink read the last chapter of The Thing in the Deep that night, and I stayed to watch her do it. I needed her to finish the book. I needed the end. When she was done, she closed the book and went over to the far wall. She reached up on her tiptoes and set it on one of the dusty wooden crossbeams.
I'm not going to read that story again, she said. I'm done with it, Midnight. Forever.
Dad once told me that the most honorable thing you can do in life is forgive. I didn't believe him at the time, and maybe I still don't. Honor came from defeating foes in battle, from going on long, noble journeys to help those in need, from vanquishing evil and protecting the innocent. Didn't it? I left. I walked to the Blue Twist, alone. I stripped and jumped in naked. Night sky above, cold, dark water below.
I let myself sink down, down, down to the smooth river stones, down into the blackness, until the river ran over my head, and my hair fanned out like flames. Wink wasn't a villain. She wasn't a hero. People aren't just one thing. They never, ever are. Wink was flesh and blood. She was bad, and she was good. She was real. And at least I was finally going to get to know her now. The real her. The real living and breathing and thinking Wink.
Poppy. My parents came home from their convention and tromped out to the Gold Apple Mine and demanded I return to civilization, just like they did before when I was out at Grandpa's cabin. But I stood my ground this time. I just kept gutting the trout I'd caught earlier. My mom looked at my bloody hands and flinched, but I was stoic, just like Anton Harvey. I was a spitting image. I told my parents I loved them, but that living with them was no longer an option. Catching fish and sleeping on the ground and being alone a lot was what I'd been built for. This was who I was, and doing the other things, being their little angel, it made me unhappy, and being unhappy made me mean. My dad muttered something about knowing it all along. I'd had Anton's eyes as a baby. I looked right at everyone in the same direct way, and my dad knew it would come to this. Though, of course, he hadn't. The liar. My mom cooed and coaxed, and when that didn't work, she sadly put her head in her hands. But I'd seen her do the same thing after spending the day with Grandpa when he was alive. And she always bounced back just fine, so I wasn't worried. I watched their car as it left, and then stared at the ruts it made in the grass for a while. They'd be back. But until then, I was going to enjoy the silence, every last peaceful, solitary splash of it. It was almost sunset. I got my sleeping bag off the wooden mine floor, threw it on the grass, under the stars, so close to the river that I fell asleep with my fingertips in the water.
Midnight. I told the Yellows about Poppy. I told them she was alive and living by herself out at Gold Apple Mine, and that she just wanted to be alone. I told them the letters were clues, but they'd been written by Wink, not Poppy. Wink left me clues so I could follow the story to the end, like Thief, when he plays Five Lies, One Truth with the old woman on the never-ending bridge. I told them the seance had been a hoax, and Wink had been behind it all. The Yellows disbanded. I think that's what Wink wanted anyway. Thomas found another girl to love, a sweet girl named Katie Kelpie, who had nice curves and a nice smile, and who was always laughing. She drove him around town on the back of her red Vespa, and had started to teach him to play the tin whistle so he could join her Irish punk band. Katie talked a mile a minute, only pausing long enough to gaze up at Thomas and make sure he was happy. And he usually was. I sometimes saw Buttercup and Zoe in the cemetery when I walked into town, taking gravestone rubbings and whispering in each other's ears, like always, like nothing was missing. Briggs. I ran into him in the woods. It was a windy day, almost dusk. He was sitting beside a green tent and small fire, staring into space. If being alone out in nature is good enough for Poppy, it's good enough for me, he said, after a while. I just nodded. She never loved us, you know. Not any of us. I nodded again. How long you plan on being out here in the woods, Briggs? He shrugged. As long as it takes. I left him by his fire. I went over to the Bell farm and walked right through the kitchen door, no knocking, because that's how things stood now. Mim was melting something over the stove, something that smelled like butter and honey and roses. Her red hair was tied back with a green scarf, and the sleeves of her black shirt were rolled up to her freckled elbows. Hold out your hand, she said without looking up. I did. She dropped a creamy dollop in the middle of my palm. It's shea butter dream cream. It helps you sleep.
I rubbed my hands together. It smells good. What will it make me dream?
Mim didn't answer, but she flashed me a mysterious smile over her shoulder, and she looked so much like Wink when she did it that I got goosebumps.
It's so quiet, I said.
Where is everyone?
Felix saw that white deer this morning, and they all ran off to follow him. Wink packed a picnic for the orphans, so they could be a while.
I sat down at the table. There was a freshly shelled bowl of sugar snap peas, and I picked up a handful of the little green guys and put them in my mouth. Mim started filling clear glass jars with the dream balm, one careful teaspoon at a time. She paused for a second, hands on her hips. She turned away from the counter, leaned across the table, and moved the bowl of peas out of the way.
I'm going to read the cards for you, Midnight.
All right, I said.
No, I'm going to read Wink's cards for you.
That got me. But Wink told me that you won't read your kids' cards anymore, ever since you read Bee Lee's once and learned she was going to die young. Mim looked at me and frowned, deep, lips tucking in at the corners.
Those weren't Bee Lee's cards. They were Wink's.
My heart stopped beating. It did. I put my palm to my chest and pushed in.
I never told her, Mim said. But she started reading cards at 12, and she learned it for herself. I thought knowing her future might help, might make her embrace life, live it to the fullest.
I was wrong, and then her father up and left too, and they were so close. I pressed harder, my whole hand into my chest. I don't believe in tarot, I said. I don't believe in fortune-telling. She pulled the cards out anyway. A quick tug of the hidden pocket. She laid them on the table. A skeleton. A dead man pierced with swords. A cloaked figure. 5 gold goblets. 2 dogs howling at the moon. A heart with 3 daggers, sunk to the hilt.
Yes, Mim said quietly.
I didn't know what the cards meant, or what Mim saw in them, but there was sadness blazing in her wink-green eyes. The cards could be wrong, I said.
Maybe.
Mim swept up the cards with one hand and put them back in her pocket. She turned to the glass jars and the dream balm, paused, and then looked at me over her shoulder.
Right or wrong, Wink believes them. And that changes everything.
I found Wink in the hayloft. The orphans were put to bed at midnight, and then it was just the two of us and a blanket on the hay and the moon shining in. We talked for hours. All truth. No fairy tales. I was almost asleep when she kissed me. She kissed my neck and my chin and my ears and everything in between. She unbuttoned my shirt, and I unbuttoned her strawberry overalls. She wrapped her bare arms around me and gripped my back, hard, and I swear I could feel her freckles pressing into my skin. Every last one of them. She didn't arch her spine or flip her hair. I pulled away. I looked at her, and she smiled. She smiled right into me. I felt it echo in my ribs, like a shout, like a deep, deep sigh. Her body curved into mine, chest to chest, my face in her hair.
Wink,
I whispered, sometime close to dawn. Everything quiet, but the sky still black.
Wink.
I put my palm against her heart and waited for it to beat, and beat, and beat. She squirmed and looked up at me, and I could see it in her eyes. She knew.
Mim read my cards for you.
I nodded. I felt her shrug, her skin moving against mine.
My heart might have 2 billion beats left in it, or 200.
She sighed.
But it doesn't matter that much. It doesn't. I used to think that I needed to be part of a story. A big story. One with trials and villains and temptations and rewards. That's how I would conquer it. Conquer death.
She sighed again, then nestled closer into me.
All that matters in the end is the little things. The way Mim says my name to wake me up in the morning. The way Bee's hand feels in mine.
The way the sun cast my shadow across the yard yesterday. The way your cheeks flush when we kiss. The smell of hay and the taste of strawberries. And the feel of fresh black dirt between my toes. This is what matters, midnight. I saw the white stag on the way home. He was standing by the apple trees, gleaming like he was made of starlight. He took one long look at me and then bounded off into the dark. I closed my eyes and made a wish.
Wink. The end of the summer. The end of this story. I kept my promise to Poppy. I sent for Leaf. I mailed a letter west to California to a cabin in the Redwoods. Leaf followed his own beat and listened to no one. I didn't know if my letter would work. Part of me wished I could ask the birds to fetch him, snatch him in their claws and carry him through the sky like Andrew in the Raven War. But part of me also hoped that Leaf would just come back on his own because I asked him to. The coyote knew he'd returned before I did. I saw him at the edge of the forest, watching the Roman luck path. Leaf smiled when he saw the both of us waiting for him, the coyote and me. Later, after he'd hugged Mim and B. Lee and let Felix introduce his girlfriend and played Follow the Screams with the twins and Peach, he went to her. I left them alone for a while, but in the end, I had to see. I snuck over to the gold apple mine, hiding in the shadows like I used to. They were there, sitting by the creek, watching the setting sun, shoulder to shoulder, blonde and red.
Poppy. Leaf.
So, this is how you live now? He asked.
I felt his eyes on me, on my back, cutting through my clothes, scorching my skin. I looked at him over my shoulder. He was leaning against the doorframe of the old gold apple mine, red hair and freckles and bony limbs, watching me start a fire. I smiled, a real Poppy smile, not any of those fake smiles I'd been using for so many years. Yes, I said. I figured it out. I figured myself out. Leaf laughed. He laughed, deep and bright, like he'd never done before. Not with me, anyway. Prove it, he said. And I did.
Midnight. I was reading by the apple trees, bare feet in the green grass, when I heard the rumble. I looked up. Black clouds rolling in. The hayloft was the place for thunderstorms. Wink and I liked to listen to the rain beat on the roof, watch lightning buzz across the sky. I took my time walking over to the barn, stopping to watch the clouds, letting the thunder boom straight into my heart. I climbed up the ladder, stuck my head through the opening, and there she was, sitting on the hay, eating strawberries from a green bowl with one hand, and turning the pages of a book with the other. She was alone. The orphans must have been off in the woods, playing one of their orphan games. I opened my mouth to call out to her, and I saw the cover of the book, a boy with a sword at his side, standing on a hill, facing a dark stone castle, grim-looking mountains in the background. I closed my eyes, opened them. I climbed back down the ladder, quiet. I walked home. I went straight up to the attic. Dad?
Yes?
I want to fly to France to see Mom in Alabama. He looked up. He didn't smile, but his eyes crinkled at the corners.
Okay, he said.
And I want you to come with.
Okay,
he said again. Just like that. France. I drank café au lait. I climbed castles.
I walked in French moonlight along French riverbanks. I spent long afternoons with Mom in Alabama, sunshine and lavender-scented breezes and distant church bells and talking about Mom's book. I hadn't said goodbye to Wink, hadn't written her a letter, hadn't called. Silence. I told Alabama. I told him everything. All of it. I wasn't looking for his advice. I just wanted to share, like brothers do. We sat in the courtyard behind our ancient stone house at the edge of Lourmarin. Mom was inside writing, and Dad was at a book auction in Avignon. They went their separate ways during the day, but later? Later we would all have a lazy al fresco dinner in the town square, and then a long walk together come twilight. Alabama reached his brown arms up and tied his straight hair back, away from his face. I thought about how little I looked like him, but I didn't mind this time. I told Alabama about my summer, about the Roman luck house, the unforgivables, the tarot cards, the thing in the deep, and Wink. Wink, wink, wink. He didn't say a word. Not until the very end. His black eyes met mine. You should have said goodbye. I know. He didn't say anything else for a while. We listened to the birds singing in the four nearby lemon trees and drank espresso from two small, fat brown cups. Eventually, my brother gave a long, low whistle and shook his head. Right now, that red-haired girl needs her fairy tales. You just gotta let her be, Midnight. I let that sink in. Like how you're just letting Tally Jasper be, you mean? Alabama grinned, slow and easy. Exactly. We've got time, brother. We've got all the time in the world. I saw a girl who looked like Wink that night. She was small, and her long hair was straight but red. Red, red, red. She was reading a book while walking two little black dogs in the trees near the chateau at the edge of Lourmarin. It was dusk. I pictured Wink in the girl's black boots and saffron-yellow dress. I pictured Wink in the woods, blue shadows, gray fog, dark sky. The two dogs became the witch wolves, following at her heels, snarling and snapping at the air. I closed my eyes, and I was there suddenly, back in the Roman luck woods. Wink. I wove my hands into her hair and felt the thick curls tugging my fingers apart. The wolves growled, but I ignored them. Wink kissed the inside of my wrists, right, then left. I sighed. She put her hand on my heart. The wolves began to howl. She looked up at me, green, green eyes. Goodbye, Midnight, she said. Goodbye for now. And then she and her wolves disappeared into the fog, going, going, gone. I opened my eyes. The French girl was watching me, watching as I just stood there in the trees with my eyes shut, dreaming about a red-haired girl a million miles away. She smiled at me. I smiled back.
Wink. Every story needs a hero. The hero of this story sat in a hayloft, surrounded by books. She pointed her pointy chin at the rafters and shouted out into the night. Her freckles danced across her cheeks like the stars danced across the sky. The hero found the boy in the woods. He had dark hair and two different colored eyes, one blue, one green. The hero thought the boy might be the villain. Every story needs a villain. But the boy was sitting by a small fire, and there was a lost look in his blue and green eyes. The boy reminded the hero of Thief. Thief, who used to sit beside his small fire and sing the old songs to keep his loneliness at bay. The hero sat down beside the boy. He started talking about his true love, the golden-haired girl he'd lost to a valiant warrior named the Red Knight. The hero had lost her true love, too. He ran off in the night. He crossed an ocean and went to live in a place with trickster cats and enchanted princes and wives hung on walls by blue-bearded men. The hero talked to the boy all night long. They shared a crisp red apple and a mug of golden milk and a piece of gingerbread. And then, when dawn came, the boy packed up his tent, gave the hero a smile, a solid true one, and went home. The hero stood alone in the forest, red hair flowing down her back. She held out her arms and felt the plump sunrise breeze blow across her skin. The hero suddenly knew that this story wouldn't be like all the other stories. There wouldn't be swords or monsters or trials. There wouldn't be riddles or revenge or resurrections. But there would be redemption and love and life and ever after.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wink Poppy Midnight by April Genevieve Tucholsky. This program was directed by Garrett Scott. Executive producer, Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2016 by April Tucholsky. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.